The Fan on Demand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Live from Leafs Nation Fan Fest outside the Air Canada Centre, it's Sportsnet Magazine with Ben Ennis on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town.
Hey there, happy Saturday to you, Ben Ennis. Sportsnet Magazine Live, joined by Jordan Heath Rawlings, Jeff Simmons from Sportsnet Magazine. Yes, we are at Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest. Down to Maple Leaf Square out in front of the Air Canada Centre. There's a blue curtain covering what will be the unveiling of Legends Row. I think we have a pretty good idea of who's on it. We won't spill the beans. That's going to happen at 11 o'clock today. So we will, we'll probably talk about it then and get our opinions on the two inductees into Legends Row. There's going to be three of them to start off, along with Ted Kennedy. Two others, and our intrepid reporter Eric Prime's been kind of snooping around trying to find out who those other two are. And again, I think we have a good idea, but we're not gonna spoil the surprise. We will tell you what's going on at 11 o'clock. Going to be here all day. I'll be here until 2 o'clock. Jeff and Jordan, you guys, you'll stick around for a couple hours. You probably want to stick around after that, though. Maybe like try. I think they have like hardest shot. You probably want to do that stuff, right?
I don't know if I want to embarrass myself in front of all these Leafs fans.
That's probably a good idea as well. Jeff, you going to stick around? Come on.
Yeah, the Leafs can use a new fourth liner. Maybe I can impress the brass here.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun day, no question, down here at Maple Leaf Square. A lot of Maple Leafs are going to be filing through here. We're going to try and grab as many guests as possible, maybe some alumni. I understand that the two new inductees that will be next to Ted Kennedy on Legends Row will be here as well. So we'll try and get them on the radio. So basically, tune your radio to Sportsnet 590 The Fan, rip the knob directly off for the next 4 hours. But lots to get to on this fine radio program for the 2 hours I have you guys next to me. We got to start with the Blue Jays. And in a season of ups and downs, man, encapsulating an entire season and maybe a 20-year stretch yesterday, the Blue Jays lose 9-8 in 10 to the Red Sox. They blow a 2-0 lead. They blow a 6-3 lead. They blow an 8-6 lead in extra innings. And I threw it out here on Twitter yesterday, guys. Casey Jansen had the comments at the non-waiver trade deadline, him and Jose Bautista, saying, well, I'm kind of disappointed we didn't make a move at the deadline. And I made a joke that a lot of people made, which was, well, maybe Casey Jansen was saying they need an upgrade at closer. Well, here's the stark numbers for Casey Jansen since the non-waiver trade deadline. He is blown three saves, so he's 3-for-6 in save opportunities. Opponents are hitting .370 against him with an OPS of .977, and the ERA is a lofty .844. So, Jordan, I'll throw this to you first. Does Casey Jansen regret those comments at this moment?
I don't know if he regrets them. He probably felt them at the time, but it's so sad. I mean, for the longest time, Casey Jansen was the one member of that bullpen that, you know, fans relied on, and they felt good when he came in the game. They felt like everything was going to be okay. He was that security blanket, and it's just at the worst possible time, at the time when everything was on the line, there was a playoff spot there for the taking, and the one most reliable member of your bullpen falls off the map. It's honestly enough to make Blue Jays fans cry.
Yeah, and like they haven't done enough crying this season yet, Jeff.
No, surprisingly not, but Jansen, the comments were just so mistimed, and they were right in the mix at the time, and since then, look what's happened to him, and it's scary because it's a contract year for him, and this is when players usually perform the best, and that's when they're trying to get their big paydays, and Jansen's really, his numbers have gone way down, and last night was just another one where they should have won that game, and that was a big game for them, and the whole team's just starting to come together, and to have that happen after that game was just so disappointing, and Jansen needs to step up in that situation, especially when he's the one coming out in the leadership role. And to see him just go down the drain like this, it's been so deflating for the fans and the team.
Yeah, you know what's really funny is that Casey Jansen wasn't the only one making those comments.
Right.
Jose Bautista came out as well and said it. And you know, to his credit, he stepped up to the plate. He's been fantastic. He's been the only reason that they were able, well, maybe not the only reason, but certainly the main reason they've been able to rip off a little run here and get fans talking again and get some hope, however misguided it might be. I was saying to Ben that I came home last night from dinner and turned on the Jays game just thinking I would check, and Edwin blasts a two-run shot, and they're up three runs, and it looks like they're about to win six in a row, and you start to believe again, and then fall behind once, fall behind twice, and it's all over. And it really is like, it is the season in a nutshell.
It's the last 20 years in a nutshell, really. But the Blue Jays, I mean, it's not like yesterday took them out of the race. If you believe they were in the race yesterday, they're still in the race. They're five games back of that second wild card spot. They're a half game behind Cleveland and the Yankees now. So Cleveland and the Yankees, four and a half back. Detroit now a half game back in Seattle for that second wild card. So it's not like, oh, they lost one game and they're completely out of it. I mean, if they were in it yesterday, one loss, doesn't mean they're not in it anymore. But there were just so many moments, and it seemed like it was going to be one of those signature-style wins. Top of the 10th inning, you got Marcus Stroman pinch-running, maybe ill-advised, but he scores on a head-first slide. You've got John Mayberry Jr. Pinch-hitting, coming up with a huge pinch-hit double down the left field line. He scores on a sacrifice fly from second base as Alan Craig loses his mind, forgets how many outs there are in right field. And after all that, it's a Blue Jays loss, 9-8 in the bottom of the 10th. And I guess overall, when you're looking at the back end of this bullpen, first of all, the bullpen as a whole has been a big disappointment and one of the big reasons why the Blue Jays have underperformed since May. But if you're looking at who's going to get the next save opportunity, it'd be difficult to go back to Jansen, I think, at this point. We've already seen other guys get opportunities. Brett Cecil's been thrown into there, Aaron Sanchez as well. I don't know, as Casey Jansen, as great as he has been in his career and before the All-Star break, is it time for the Blue Jays to every save situation now down the stretch, put somebody else except for Casey Jansen in there?
Yeah, I think that's the right way to go, and maybe you start preparing for the future, because Jansen's, I said earlier, he's in a contract year. It doesn't seem like he's going to be back. And maybe you start testing and see what you have. You got Sanchez, who's been outstanding in the bullpen. He's got the power arm. You might as well see if he can close at this level. And some of the other options are pretty intriguing, too. You got some of the young guys. You can even try Norris in late inning situations. His curveball last night was outstanding.
Yeah. We just know so little about Daniel Norris, but so far so good. Thrown into his first opportunity, strikes out David Ortiz in a pretty crucial moment of that game. I believe it was a one-run game at the time.
Yeah, we know so little about him, so let's find out more. I mean, I think Casey Jansen's shown you that what he's got left, at least for the rest of this season, is not going to be much. He never really recovered from that illness that he had around the All-Star break.
The Dominican. He had some bad beef or something.
I mean, I've been down there, and I've had some bad beef, too. But yeah. 2 months later, I was okay.
That was actually your nickname in high school, was Bad Beef.
Yeah.
People don't know that about you. I don't know what it means, but it was, Bad Beef.
I can't tell you what it means.
Heath Rawlings. Yeah, so it seems like a situation where Casey Jansen, I don't expect him to be a Blue Jay next season. Wherever he goes, I would be surprised if he's thrown into a closer situation right off the bat. Probably a back end of the bullpen guy, maybe a 7th, 8th inning guy. But Blue Jays probably going to be looking at different options as they go forward. We are at Maple Leafs Fan Fest here down at Maple Leaf Square. Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis along with Jordan Heath Rawlings and Jeff Simmons will be here. Well, this program will be on until 10 o'clock, and then I will take you through until 2 o'clock this afternoon. So Brandon Morrow got into that game yesterday, too. That was fun. He gave up a hit, got a couple of outs. He was throwing in the high 90s. It was good to see him back on a mound. He was doing his pretty typical Brandon Morrow thing where he throws hard. He was throwing 97, 98, but he wasn't throwing a whole bunch of strikes. He was falling behind guys. I don't think he has much of a future left in Toronto, as he's got an option on his contract. But there are a couple of guys, and we touched on one of them, Daniel Norris, who we were all excited to see. I know that was, for me, must-watch television when Daniel Norris came into that game against David Ortiz. Kendall Graveman came in, got one batter. We still haven't seen Dalton Pompey swing a bat, but he's come in a couple of times as a pinch runner. This is the first time, I think, in a long time that there's like multiple exciting young players for this Blue Jays team if they do, in fact, fall short this season. seems like there's a little excitement going forward.
Yeah, coming into this year, the Jays hadn't developed a pitcher almost in the entire Anthopoulos regime. Mm-hmm. I think Sean Markham may have been the last good one since Romero's almost flamed out. And this year, there's a ton of guys, and more than ever, there's guys to watch in September. And you got Norris, and you got Stroman and Sanchez, and these guys are going to be staples in the rotation if they don't move them. But more than ever, usually you got guys in September that you're not too excited about. They're kind of 4A players. There's a huge difference here, and they've really done a nice job developing young players, which could really bode well for their future, because that's been a big reason they haven't performed and they haven't been developing. They've had to rely on free agency so much. And last year they tried to get pitchers so hard and they struck out. And now that they can develop their own on the cheap, this can really help the team going forward.
You know what's funny is if you go back to May or maybe even, let's go back to even February, when there's a lot of pessimism around this team from last year. And if you had told a Blue Jays fan in February that the team was going to come out gangbusters, they'd be up on the division for a little while, they'd be battling on the fringe at least of the wild card race into September, and they certainly look like they're going to at least be in the picture for another couple of weeks. And along the way, we'd get to see Aaron Sanchez, and we'd get to see Marcus Stroman take the reins, and we'd get to see Daniel Norris go from AA to the big leagues. If you had told them that in February, I think Blue Jays fans would have been pretty happy about that. I mean, there's been some big strides in development this season, and there's certainly been some positive results on the field at times. And it's one of those things where it gets overshadowed by the narrative of this season and the way everything happened. And obviously, you look at it, you're six games up, and you really, everybody was spouting around those playoff percentages, and the Jays were at 75 and 80% to make playoffs. It was like, how can we lose? But it's baseball, and it's a marathon, and you know, if you step back and look at it that way and sort of start thinking about, well, I would have taken it in February. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, it's funny how perceptions change, right? Because going into the season, a lot of people had this team projected as the fifth-place team in the American League East. Certainly the Red Sox weren't expected to completely fall flat on their faces like they've done this year. The Yankees, beset by so many starting pitching injuries. Same with the Rays. And who would have thought that the Orioles would be the juggernaut that they've been? But it did change. I mean, and I think it fairly changed because of those things that happened and because of how well they played early in the season and because of the massive gap they had in the American League East after that May, early June run where they were six games up in the division. I think it's fair to look at this season as a disappointment, despite the fact that if before the season you'd said, the Blue Jays, you know, five games back and closing in on 10 games over 500 and ending up with 85 wins, that would probably have been exceeding expectations before the season. But expectations changed, and I think it's a fair criticism of this team to say that they did not live up to in-season expectations.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying it's not fair. I'm disappointed. I know every Blue Jays fan that I know is disappointed. It's bitter. It's really tough when, you know, you feel like you're finally going to end that drought, and you see the Royals, who are now looking like they might make the playoffs, which would leave the Blue Jays as the longest playoff drought in MLB. Actually, the longest playoff drought in North American professional sports.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you
Buffalo Bills zoning in on them, though.
Yeah, well, the Buffalo Bills don't look like they're going to catch them anytime soon. So, but it is totally fair to be disappointed with the way it happened. I'm just trying to say that if you had told me before the season started that you'd get these kind of positives out of it, I would have been pretty happy because I was expecting to be disappointed in February.
And I think a reasonable expectation, and a lot of fans were just asking for, was meaningful gains in September. And when they were up six games in June, and I think Baltimore's a bit underestimated, and especially when those players came out with those comments. But last night's game kind of felt meaningful, but it's not that they're going to have to go like 17-5 to make the playoffs or at least have a chance.
They need another May.
Yeah, and I think what fans were just asking for were games that felt like the playoffs in September, because since 1993, they haven't had that.
And that one sort of did yesterday. It had that feel.
Yeah, that was the first one I can remember to have a meaningful playoff-type game. And now, after, they're going to have to almost go like May, as you said. And now you might not get the kind of atmosphere we were hoping for. And I think in June, that's a fair expectation.
Well, here's the reality is that they're playing teams that aren't exactly juggernauts coming up. They got still two more against the Red Sox, and they come home and play a Cubs team that has some pretty good up-and-coming players, and they got the Rays back in town again. So if you're able to continue rattling off wins, I know it felt like a major step back yesterday, but you did take care of business in Tampa Bay. You won a game. Maybe you didn't have a whole lot of business winning in that final game of the series, 1-0 in 10 innings when the Rays had the bases loaded, none out, and couldn't score. If you're able to come back strong, win a couple in a row, take care of business against the Cubs and Rays could be an entirely different conversation in about a week's time. This is Sportsnet Magazine live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Ennis along with Jordan Heath Rawlings and Jeff Simmons here of Sportsnet Magazine. We are down at Maple Leafs Fan Fest, as I don't think the gates have opened quite yet, but soon enough, fans will start filing in here. We will likely have tickets to give away to this event as well, and we'll give you details on how you can pick those up later on in the day. Unveiling of Legends Row coming up after 11 o'clock. We'll give you the details on that. Also discuss the two inductees along with Ted Kennedy that are headed in at 11 o'clock. But the Blue Jays, I mean, not only do they lose in about as heartbreaking a style as you can, 9, 8, and 10 innings yesterday, they also lost, I think it's hard to argue, their most consistent player all season long. Melky Cabrera, not only has he been the most consistent player, he's taken the field every single day. He's played through aches and pains. He's gotten hit on the elbow with pitches and had grapefruits growing on his elbow and come back the next day and played. Can't play with a broken finger. He has one, broken pinky. He will have surgery. His season is done. He's a pending free agent. Obviously, he's going to have a lot of suitors, and obviously the Blue Jays would be well-served in re-signing him. It's going to be a big question mark, but man, we should mention Melky Cabrera, what a season it's been and what a catalyst for this offense he has been. It's going to be a huge loss here down the stretch.
Well, he was largely written off. He's another one of those guys, when you talk about in February, looking back at last year, you would have seen it as a disappointment because obviously he struggled last year, and it sort of came out towards the end that he was playing with a tumor on his back and had it removed and looked like a completely different player. Just he had more jump in his step. He had the legs. He was faster than he'd been in a couple years. And, you know, not necessarily slugging the ball, but just being a table setter every day, which is something that with Bautista and Encarnacion in the lineup, you really need. You need guys who are going to get on base. Jose Reyes had a somewhat rough start to the year. He's really come on. But when nobody else was going there, Melky Cabrera was the guy who would come up with three hits in a game and score two runs and was really a part of the engine that drove this team. And I hope he seems to have told Shai Davidi on Sportsnet.ca that he wants to come back to the Blue Jays next year.
Yeah.
And with guys like Jansen probably leaving, and hopefully there'll be enough money there. He's certainly due for a raise.
But what's he going to say, right? Like, he's not going to say, no, I'd like to leave. I'm definitely leaving. He's not going to say that.
Well,
I'm
Casey
sure
Jansen's kind of saying that.
Well,
I think the Blue Jays.
I think the Blue Jays and Casey Jansen are probably on the same page in that regard, especially now. And paying a reliever is never, well, it can be ill-advised at times because it's such a volatile position. Guys have bad seasons after good and good after bad. It's kind of an up-and-down thing. But as far as Melky Cabrera, this is a guy who has shown he can hit. Like, this isn't out of nowhere. The guy was leading the National League in hitting before he was popped for the drug suspension with the San Francisco Giants. But Jeff, it does seem like he really enjoys this team. It seems like he and Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion and Jose Reyes have sort of created a nice little friendship, team of friends, super friends over there. So it seems like he really, I mean, it's hard to know because we're not in it, but on the outside looking in, it seems like a guy is enjoying his time in Toronto.
Yeah, that top four has become one of the most dangerous part of any lineup in the American League. And I think on a team that's relied on home runs so much with Bautista and Encarnacion, Cabrera's been the perfect number two hitter for them because he's got such a solid approach at the plate, and he's a pure hitter, and they really need a guy like that in front of their home run swingers that sometimes can be all or nothing. And I think he's been so reliable all season long, and I don't know if he's got the appreciation he's deserved. Yeah. He's maybe been their most reliable player, as you mentioned, and losing him down the stretch is really going to hurt their chances because, as I said earlier, they got to go at least 17-5.
Well, it's probably good news, though, for Colby Rasmus, right? He probably gets back into the lineup where he was relegated to a bench role. It's one thing to try and clog an outfield spot next year with a platoon of Ryan or of Kevin Pillar and Anthony Ghosh, but to try and clog two outfield holes with maybe John Mayberry, I mean, that's a disaster scenario for this Blue Jays team, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you need to know what you have going into next year. And maybe we find out down the stretch here with Pillar and Ghosh playing a lot of the games. And Ghosh, I think, is kind of right on the precipice. This is going to be kind of a make or break. Maybe not break, but this is the winter that he has a chance to really, you know, work on his approach at the plate, take a step. Because if he can come into spring training next year and show that he's improved as a hitter, that's really, you know, the main weakness in his game. Obviously, he has fantastic speed. He's shown that he can field center field exceptionally. And if he could just be, nobody's asking him to be a masher. Nobody's asking him to be Melky Cabrera, be Jose Bautista. But if he can just show that, you know, even if he can get on base at a little better than 300 and be ready to do some damage on the base pass, that will go a long way. And he can make up for what he loses to Colby Rasmus in the power department with his speed and defense.
There haven't been many moments this season where I've questioned John Gibbons' decision-making to the extent that I did yesterday. And we don't have to break down the entire game yesterday, but there was a moment yesterday that I think got a lot of people talking. It was the pinch running for Ryan Goins with Dalton Pompey late in that game. Ended up mattering because Steve Tolleson committed the error in a tie game in the bottom of the 10th there on a double play that I also tweeted was probably in the 1% easiest double plays you will turn in Major League Baseball, because David Ortiz was running, couldn't get the flip to second base, ended up obviously costing the Blue Jays. They had the bases loaded, and Yoenis Cespedes hit the whatever single to center field that was like off the wall. But John Gibbons, as a whole, as a discussion point, there were obviously the reports earlier, a couple of weeks ago, I feel like it was a month ago now, time flies, but that he and Alex Anthopoulos would be back. There's been talk, some of it instigated by me, about this team's, I don't know, chemistry. Something's not right, it seems like, at times. And maybe that's just, you know, confirmation bias where they're losing. And of course something's not right. But it does seem like there's something a little bit off. And maybe the comments at the non-waiver trade deadline were playing into that as well. But what do you guys think about the future of John Gibbons as far as going forward to next season?
You know what? I like John Gibbons as a manager. I think I'm in the field that says that baseball managers don't actually do that much. Of all the major North American sports, baseball managers are the ones that have the least influence on how their team plays day to day.
Football's number one, right?
Football's number one. I'd say hockey's number two. Basketball's number three. Basketball becomes critically important at times.
I don't know. I think I'd probably put baseball ahead of basketball.
You think? You got to drop those last second plays in basketball. That's the coach there with the X's and O's. He's telling them where to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, to get to the heart of this team, the one thing I've noticed about them is, it's a weird thing that seems to be going on with their psyche. They just can't get out of their own way when things get really good. And it goes back to last year. They had a rough start. They ripped off 11 games in a row. Everybody started to get excited. People started to talk about them as maybe contenders. And then they followed it up by falling on their face. And sort of the same thing has happened at least once already this year, when they followed up a great May with a middling June. And, you know, I don't want to say that it's happened again last night, but like we said earlier, it's kind of a microcosm, right? You sort of seem to get a little momentum, everything starts going your way, you start feeling good, and it's like you can't handle your own success. And that's the kind of thing that, if you believe that a team takes its personality from a manager, then maybe you ask a question about John Gibbons. For me, I think he's done a good job with the X's and O's. He's put the right guys in, he puts the shift on at the right time, and whatever else happens is really out of his hands.
Yeah, I used to be on the same thought as Jordan, but the more I watch the Baltimore Orioles, the more I start to wonder.
Right.
Since Buck Showalter's got there, the whole team has changed, and they've played such solid defense. They've been so reliable, and at some point you have to ask, is this the manager or is this the players? Because he's really stabilized that team, and the Baltimore Orioles were almost a fifth-place team almost every year until he got there. And so at some point, why aren't you asking, what's changed? And really, it's been him, and he's really changed the way they play defense, and they run the bases, and they don't make a lot of mistakes. And with Gibbons, the Jays are so erratic defensively, and I love how Gibbons mostly manages the bullpen and manages the lineups other than that base-running fiasco last night. But at some point you wonder, why are they always 500 with John Gibbons? And maybe that it comes back down to the manager.
Yeah, that's the example I use as well, Jeff, the Baltimore Orioles, right? Because on paper, are the Blue Jays that less talented than Baltimore? I wouldn't say so. The rotations, I think, are very similar. The Orioles do not have a number one. They have a bunch of guys that are kind of middle-of-the-rotation guys. How come they're able to get more out of that team than the Blue Jays are? And I'm not saying for sure it's the manager, but I'm open to discussing the possibility that it is. And certainly Buck Showalter's done a pretty good job with that team. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Ben Annis along with Jeff Simmons, Jordan Heath Rawlings of Sportsnet Magazine. We're at Maple Leafs Fan Fest here at Maple Leaf Square in front of the Air Canada Center. People starting to file in, wearing their Leaf jerseys as at 11 o'clock they will unveil the other two initial inductees into Legends Row here, the statue that will include Ted Kennedy, some guys coming over the boards, and we have a pretty good idea who those other two will be, but we will bring it to you live, and we'll give you kind of a play-by-play of what's going on here. But when we come back, going to shift gears a little bit. The National Football League is underway. We have games to talk about as the Packers smoked in Seattle. My wife is happy because she had Seattle in her suicide pool. Seahawks beat the Packers 36-16. Full slate of games tomorrow. Exciting stuff. A long time coming. So probably one last chance to get our Super Bowl predictions in before it's really not fair after week one. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live down at Maple Leaf Square on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We've got Pierre Garçon, who might be a little lacking as a top wide receiver, but is an excellent wide receiver too. Alfred Morris is not a bad rusher, but it just, the coaching is off. Now they're going to bring in Jay Gruden, who knows how that'll fit Griffin. It certainly didn't look like it would in the preseason. I don't think Dallas is as terrible as some people think. Like Jeff said, you know, kind of 8-8. They'll win a few games. They'll cough up a few games that they have no business coughing up because
Tony Romo doesn't
do
that, does he?
No, I've never seen it before. All right, we got about 30 seconds before we have to break. Super Bowl predictions. Last opportunity. Who's going to meet in the Super Bowl? Who's going to win it? Jeff.
On the website, I took Green Bay over Denver. Now I'm starting to wonder about that. But I think once Aaron Rodgers gets figured, I got to stick to my guns. It's been one game. I'll stick with Green Bay, but now I'm starting to wonder why I didn't take Seattle. Maybe I was scared to jinx them, but
I did the exact same thing. I was scared to take Seattle to repeat, but I'm not going to change it now. I went with the Broncos over the Saints in the Super Bowl.
All right, I'm going crazy. Yeah, I like the Saints. I'd like the Saints to win it all. Saints over Cincinnati. How about that in the Super Bowl?
Andy Dalton will never play in a Super Bowl.
Well, all right. That's probably true, but I like to make ballsy picks. When we come back, they're about to unveil Legends Row here at Maple Leaf Square Fan Fest. We'll give you all the details, talk about it. Coming up next, this is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. This is Magpipes.
Oh, there it is.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings, Jeff Simmons from Sportsnet Magazine. We are live at Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest at Maple Leaf Square outside of the Air Canada Center, moments away from the unveiling of Legends Row. We will bring it to you live here. Also, we have tickets for today's event to give away a couple pairs, and Eric Prime has them in his hot little hand. He is outside Real Sports Bar and Grill here at Maple Leaf Square, and here's how you can win them. You go up to Mr. Prime, who is wearing a Maple Leaf scarf, so you can recognize him. Also, probably know him by looking at his Twitter handle. He's a picture of himself, I think, as his avatar. First two people to go up to Eric Prime and say Purple Monkey Dishwasher get the two pairs, well, a pair each for today's event. Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest down at Maple Leaf Square. I've just tweeted out that information as well. So go up to Eric Prime and say Purple Monkey Dishwasher if you want to get in today. And later on after noon, we'll give away some tickets for tomorrow's event as well as it continues. But guys, all right. So we're about to find out who those two gents are that will join Ted Kennedy on Legends Row here on this sculpture that we've kind of peeked at. It's behind a curtain right now, and all the dignitaries starting to show up. We saw Dave Nonis, Cliff Fletcher in attendance, and people starting to sit down. We got the bagpipes probably ready to crank up again here in mere moments. This is a long time coming, though, right? Like, it's kind of ridiculous that this is one of the most storied franchises in the National Hockey League, and only now we're getting a statue commemorating some of the greats, but at least it's finally here.
Yeah, we came full circle, because if you remember when Tim Lewicki came in, we were talking about how we didn't want to dwell on the past, and we didn't want to have all these old portraits hanging up, and, you know, we wanted to think about today. But really, this is an Original Six franchise. It's clearly the most popular team in the country. I'm going to get some angry tweets from out in the prairies and Quebec for saying that. But it's about time. We have this beautiful new square, and it's about time we honored the heritage of this team.
Yeah, and it looks like a spectacular statue as well. Ted Kennedy, I think a pretty good choice to be the first guy going in there posthumously. We believe that the next two guys are still living, so that'll be cool, and they will be on hand as Brendan Shanahan just showing up here as well, as it looks like we're about to get underway, and we'll kind of won't let you hear it. We'll kind of give you the play-by-play of what is taking place, and you'll probably know it started because the bagpipes will start playing, and sorry for that, but that appears to be happening in mere moments. Guys, what do you think about the decisions and who should be on that Legends Row along with Ted Kennedy? I don't want to get into speculation about who the two today will be, but what do you think about blending the old school, the Ted Kennedy types, with maybe somebody that's a little newer school? Like, I know it's been so long since this team has won a Stanley Cup, so it's hard, though, to ignore the last 50 years, though, right? Like, don't you have to have somebody in there, even from those early 90s teams, like a Doug Gilmour type? Does that make sense, or is it too early? Are there just too many guys to go through first before you get to a Doug Gilmour type player for the Maple Leafs to honor here?
Yeah, I think considering their history, Doug Gilmour and Matt Sundin would be another excellent choice, but I think there's so many guys who have brought Stanley Cups or have done a little, who have been before them, like a Daryl Sittler would be an outstanding one, or maybe, well, Dave Keon's relationship with the Maple Leafs is a little iffy, but he would be another outstanding one. But if you're looking at 90s guys, Doug Gilmour, no, I don't think that there's been a better single season in Toronto since Gilmour's in 92-93. So he's a fan favorite from especially the younger generation of Leaf fans, so he would be an outstanding choice. But there's people who have gone before him that might make more sense after Kennedy.
Can I just say that I am pretty much absolutely fine with whoever we decide should be included in this, except I'd love to stay away from the crushes that Toronto sports fans seem to have on players who are less than stellar. So,
well, but the thing is, there hasn't been too many stellar players in the last 40 years of this franchise, right?
But I promise you that as this thing goes on, you're going to hear people say, oh, Wendell Clark should be on there. Mm. And Wendell Clark was great while he was in Toronto. We hear the bagpipes starting up behind me. It's beautiful. But Wendell Clark is not a Hall of Fame caliber player. He's not a legend. He's a legend in the minds of some fans and whatever, but a guy like Matt Sundin, who is, you know, a typical Toronto Maple Leaf, who is excellent and, you know, who could maybe, if you count his time on Team Sweden, make a case for the Hall of Fame. Those are the caliber of players. Let's not have any Toronto sports fans crushes in this.
So, yeah, you're starting to hear the bagpipes. Bagpipers parading around the outside of some family and friends, I believe, who are in front of the stage here. It looks like we're about to get underway with the unveiling. And again, we'll bring it to you live here. And Eric Prime is out front of Real Sports Bar and Grill with a couple of tickets to today's Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest. If you go up to him and you say Purple Monkey Dishwasher, those tickets can be yours. It's kind of weird, though, that this city as a whole kind of doesn't do a great job of honoring the past. A couple of weeks ago, I guess it was last week, I saw that the Rays have that white seat in right field, right, where Dan Johnson hit that home run in game 162. They've honored that moment because it was a pretty cool moment in that franchise's history. How come the Toronto Blue Jays don't have anything commemorating not just the biggest moment in that franchise's history, but one of the biggest moments in the history of baseball? Joe Carter hit a home run to walk off a World Series win in 1993. How come there is nothing to commemorate that? A statue? I don't know. Something? I don't know if you can put... the ball actually landed in the bullpen. I was mistaken in thinking that it landed in the auxiliary press box, which was in the left field stands in 93. But I don't know. Shouldn't we have something at Rogers Center to commemorate that?
I don't know. It goes to our whole Canadian personality of not wanting to brag and not wanting to, you know, showboat. It's why we don't have, we hang a couple of banners and then we hope that we get back there again. And I do think they should have something. You know, there's been a number of great moments in this city's sports history, and unfortunately none of them have come lately, so maybe it's time to start honoring some of the ones that came in the past.
Yeah, and it's there's so much history surrounding the Toronto Maple Leafs. It's kind of the perfect franchise to do something like this, the Legends Row. It's going to be a cool photo op, too, for people who show up at the Air Canada Centre for a Leafs game, right? There aren't too many things that you can come to Toronto if you're a Leaf fan and you know, take your picture with some of the Leaf greats. That's going to be kind of a neat thing. I don't know how many people go to Maple Leaf Gardens and take a picture out there. I actually haven't been into the Longos or whatever, the Loblaws inside there. I don't know. Are there still landmarks in there that you can take photos of? Do they have, like, the lines painted on the ground where the rink was?
If they do, I haven't noticed it while I've been shopping for my groceries. Right. It's very much a modern grocery store. Nice grocery store.
Yeah, so this is kind of be... It's going to be one of those situations where people are going to travel from across this country, from across North America probably, to have their picture taken with this Legends Row, who we will now find out the next two inductees to Legends Row alongside Ted Kennedy. Let's talk about the potential for this Leafs team, though, guys, going forward. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network, Ben Ennis, Jordan Heath Rawlings, and Jeff Simmons. So expectations, I was talking about this with somebody yesterday. Expectations for this Leafs team are actually pretty high last year, I would say, coming off that, I know, very disappointing end to a playoff run a couple of years ago, but an unexpected playoff run against a very good Bruins team to a seventh game. And we all know what happened in Game 7. Okay, I don't have to bring it up again. But expectations were pretty high for last season, and they fell oh so very short despite that great start. And a lot of it had to do with losing Jonathan Bernier at a key stretch of the season. But now you go into a season where there's no big off-season pickup, right? Like, there's a bunch of dudes, just a couple of guys. Stefan Robida, Roman Polak on the back end. Mike Santarelli. Daniel Winnick. Now, that's probably, I would argue, the best course of action for this team, but what are expectations for them? Are they going to be in the Connor McDavid sweepstakes? Is it an 8th to 6th type to maybe 10th type season? Or is this a team that could surprise a lot of people?
I still think they're stuck in that kind of proverbial no man's land where they're not good enough to be a reliable playoff team, but they're not bad enough for Connor McDavid. And they've had a pretty good offseason in terms of what they have. For number one, they didn't screw up and hand out a dumb contract or overpay anyone. They brought in guys on one-year deals to shore up the bottom of their roster, because that was a big disaster. They were playing Jay McClellan and those enforcers way too much last year. So right now it could be you're just about development. They got some good young players. They got Gardner and they got Riley. And right now it's kind of just a wait and see. They got a whole new top of the organization with Brendan Shanahan. He brought in a lot of new executives that kind of change the way the team thinks. So I think they're on a good path, but they still have so many questions on their roster. As good as the analytics stuff is, and as good as they're finally looking is, they still have Tyler Bozak as their number one center. They still have Dion Phaneuf as their number one defenseman. So I don't think just hiring all these guys is going to change the problems on that roster.
I think it'll be an interesting wait and see season. There's certainly some young talent there, especially on the back end. And yeah, as you said, the moves on the bottom end of the forwards should really shore it up. The Eastern Conference, outside of a few teams,
right,
wide open.
Well, I mean, did anyone expect the Rangers and the Canadiens to do what they did in the postseason, right? It's just about getting in, it seems like, in the Eastern Conference.
And the Rangers and Canadiens were sort of teams that maybe before last year, you wouldn't have said that they were exactly on par with the Leafs, but they would have still been clubs that you would have said, you know, 5-9 and 10, you know, trying to get into the playoffs, make a couple things happen. The difference is that those teams were good possession teams. And,
yeah,
you know, that's what everybody wants to talk about. And you won't see these analytics hires pay dividends right now. I mean, they might tweak a few things, maybe encourage Randy Carlyle to play some guys more and some guys less, but it's really about building for the long term and building around some of these pieces. And I think this is a good season for the Leafs to go into with no expectations, with a nice top line, some good young pieces, and just see what happens. Because if you get on a roll in this conference, who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. It seems so wide open once again this year. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings, Jeff Simmons. We are at Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest here at Maple Leaf Square out in front of the Air Canada Center. And festivities are underway out front here with the unveiling of Legends Row. They haven't quite unveiled it yet, but we will give you the details once we find out who those other inductees, I guess if you want to call them, or unveilees, whatever. The dudes on the bench next to Ted Kennedy. We'll tell you who they are once we know, and they have mercifully stopped bagpiping, so that's good. Guys, do you think there's a... I know Nazem Kadri has had his moments where he's been given a chance to take over that number one center spot. He's played alongside Phil Kessel and James Van Riemsdyk at times, and it hasn't really worked out. Certainly not as well as, for whatever reason, Tyler Bozak has worked out between those guys. I think most people agree that there's a little more offensive flair in Kadri's game compared to Bozak, but is there a chance that going into the season they give him another chance to be that number one center? Is it a situation where if it ain't broke, don't fix it as far as a Bozak in that number one spot?
Yeah, I think they're going to stick with Bozak here. I just think chemistry has been proven over the years that Bozak works with Kessel and works with Van Riemsdyk. He's not nearly as talented as Kadri is, but Kadri hasn't worked when playing with them. I think Kadri is a perfect guy to put on the second line on this kind of team, just in the wait-and-see mode, because maybe if Randy Carlyle tries to play more of a possession game, that might help Kadri. But I think you leave him on the second line and you stick with that top line, which is the one strength this team has had outside of the last couple games of last year. So I don't think you change what isn't broken, because there are a lot of things broken with this team.
And Kadri's also shown a little bit of chemistry with Joffrey Lupo.
Yeah.
Which would be, I mean, you're not going anywhere without a reliable second line scoring. And if Lupo can stay healthy for all, which he hasn't for all but basically one season in his career, or at least the last 5 years, we could actually see a team that can roll two lines and score with two lines. And that'll go a long way towards helping some of the bad possession problems.
Guys, we don't know who those other two guys yet will be on Legends Row, but I can pretty much guarantee it won't be David Clarkson. He had about as poor a season as you can have, being a huge off-season acquisition for this Leafs team last season. Are we expecting a bounce back, or is this who David Clarkson is? He looked so bad at times last year. He can't be any worse, can he?
Well, what does a bounce back constitute for David
Clarkson?
8 goals,
so
10
he can't
goals?
Be any worse.
Well, that's the thing. He's come all the way around to now. We've basically written off that entire contract as a waste of money. So if David Clarkson can show up and play chippy and chip in 15 goals and not be a liability defensively, then, you know, at this point, that's a bonus, because I think most Leaf fans will shake their head when you mention his name.
And David Clarkson, I watched him a lot in New Jersey. He looked like a completely different player last year. Obviously, all the numbers indicated that he wasn't going to, that 130 goal season was a rarity, and that wasn't expected to happen again. But Leaf fans expected him to score, and not only did he not score, he didn't do the little things. He wasn't that guy who would go into the corner and drive the forecheck, so he was really adding nothing. If there was a worse than hockey, this could have been minus 100 or something, because he really added nothing. And
if there was a falling down for no reason stat, he would have led it, though.
Yeah, that's got to be worth, $70 million?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, he was horrible. So, like I said, he can't be any worse. And the Maple Leafs didn't blow themselves or didn't shoot themselves in the foot here with the offseason acquisitions. Nice guys on nice money and didn't go out and just add to their salary cap woes by trying to take another chance on a David Clarkson. So, and Mike Santorelli, those are guys that, you know, when healthy, have proven ability to contribute at the NHL level. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. Ben Ennis alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings, Jeff Simmons here at Maple Leaf Square for Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest, as festivities underway as far as the unveiling of Legends Row and the two guys joining Ted Kennedy on that bench. How much of last year's meltdown was goaltending related, guys? You can almost point directly to the Jonathan Bernier injury, to when Maple Leafs kind of just fell on their swords here, and James Reimer could not carry the mantle as the number one. He's back, and purely as a backup role, we all understand that now. How much of it was Jonathan Bernier just going out? Because this was a team that was pretty good, maybe not as far as possession, but they were right in the mix of the playoff race before he went out.
I don't think any of it is goaltending related.
Really?
I think they got goaltenders who were playing amazingly in the first half of the season, better than almost any goaltending duo in the NHL. And you can't sustain that for an entire season when you're getting outshot by 8 or 10 shots per game. Blaming what happened to the Leafs in the last quarter of last season on the goaltending is folly. It's just you're setting yourself up again to expect way, way, way above league average play from goaltenders who are both good but are never going to steal. You know, goaltenders steal games. They don't steal seasons.
Yeah, and Jonathan Bernier has had his moments where he's stolen games, no question. We kind of touched on it a little bit, the move towards analytics for this team, and Dave Nona surrounded by a bunch of guys who are big fans of analytics, Kyle Dubas among them. Dave Nonis is here, and he's taking part in this unveiling of Legends Row. How much of his strategy, his thinking, do you think will be changed by the names and the faces being brought into that front office and in regards to making in-season trades and going forward, if he's still here, to next season in the free agent market?
I think a lot of the moves they made last year, which bothered the analytics community, almost defied the numbers, which is why the Leafs were criticized so heavily last year, the David Clarkson contract, just the way they played and defied possession, just the way the league was going. And I think it will be good for Nonis to have people around him kind of to give him someone in his ear to say, like, are you sure this is a good idea? Or maybe you should look at this guy. Or especially with Randy Carlyle, to have some numbers to kind of support the way some of the things he's doing isn't working. And I think especially with the guys they brought in, the bottom line kind of indicates that. I don't think Colton Orr will play too much this year, unless there's a ton of injuries. And I don't think McLaren will play too much this year. And they got some guys like Winnick, who clearly are possession-type guys, which is a big change from last year. So I think the fact that they've made a progressive move and they started thinking a little differently is a pretty good sign, because they've almost been a backwards-thinking team since I can remember.
I think it was a pretty clear message from Brendan Shanahan to Dave Nonis to hire those guys. You're looking at a GM who's, you know, said a few times that he doesn't do things that way, and now the new man in charge is bringing in guys who do things that way. There were questions at the end of last year whether or not Nonis deserved to keep his job, and he's back, and Randy Carlyle's back, but there's also a whole bunch of new minds in the room, and I think this is basically Shanahan saying, you have to at least take these things into account, and if you don't, we're going to be in a mess, and I don't think he's going to, if it happens again, I don't think he's going to fire the new guys that he just brought in.
It's going to be interesting this season as well to see how the young back end of this team performs, specifically Jake Gardner, of course, and Morgan Rielly, who looks like he's emerging, and Gardner being trusted a little bit more, trying to eliminate some of the riskiness in his game. Although, I mean, that's kind of what makes him great as well, right? The offensive flair that he can bring to this team. And Morgan Rielly, not the most physical guy in the world, but his puck handling skills are spectacular. And you add that to maybe an emerging Nazem Kadri. But this is kind of a make-or-break season for Kadri as well. We're all waiting for him to get back to what he did in that shortened season, labor stoppage shortened season. Maybe that's unfair to expect him to get back to it, but I mean, that's the bar now for him.
I hate to keep coming back to analytics when we talk about this thing, but that shortened season for Kadri was way out of line with whatever he's put up before in his career. And when you shoot a significantly higher percentage than you ever have before or since, it's unfair to expect him to do that again. I think Nazem Kadri's a great young player. He's got a lot of room to grow. He's got a fantastic amount of skill with the puck. And part of the problem that the Leafs have had in recent years is putting so much expectation on who the next great player is going to be and putting too much weight on what these guys are supposed to do within a year or two of starting their career. It's like we either have too high expectations for this team or none at all. And I think, like I said, it's a good year to wait and see with Kadri and everybody else.
The Toronto Maple Leafs continuing to get the scene set for the unveiling of Legends Row here. We'll give you the details once we have them. We don't have them yet. They have not unveiled it, but we're expecting that to happen shortly, and the two names to be added to Ted Kennedy on that little bench there. Should be a great monument out front of Air Canada Center. We'll bring that to you when we have the information. But when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the Maple Leafs and certainly give you the details about Legends Row, but we'll also talk about Toronto FC and Jermaine Defoe still being a Reds player and the debacle that was a couple of weeks ago now, with TFC completely cleaning house with their coaching staff and the possibility that their huge off-season acquisition would be departing this team. What does the future hold without Tim Leiwicki down at BMO Field? And Toronto FC also playing this afternoon, which we will bring you the action after 2 o'clock here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Brett Popplewell.
It's been 2 years since Roger Federer won his last Grand Slam. 8 since someone described watching him play as a bloody near religious experience, and an eternity since he replaced Pete Sampras as the greatest tennis player who ever lived. And yet, Roger Federer is still out there, trying to play like only Roger Federer can. 16 years into his career, he remains one of sport's most perfect athletes, tennis's answer to Muhammad Ali, Babe Ruth, and Wayne Gretzky. But he's old now. older than Sampras was when he retired. In fact, he's older than any man who has won a Grand Slam in the past 40 years. For 1 week in August, we followed Federer as he cut his way through the field at the Rogers Cup. We were there when he won and when he lost. We were right there when he showed his kids how to play ping pong, and we were there to celebrate with him on his birthday, when he ate a cupcake and then answered our questions. So what's left to be said about one of sport's most endearing icons? Read and find out.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet magazine, available on newsstands now, and for your tablet and mobile phone on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis, alongside Jordan Heath Rawlings and Jeff Simmons. We are at Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest here at Toronto Maple Leaf Square, out front of the Air Canada Center. And Daryl Sittler is speaking right now, the second member of Legends Row. He will be alongside Ted Kennedy. And guys, I think a pretty obvious one, right? I almost thought he would be the first guy ahead of Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy is a little bit before my time, but yeah, Ted Kennedy, a nice addition. And Daryl Sittler had to be on there. So this makes a whole lot of sense, doesn't it?
Certainly when you think back about the great Maple Leafs of the past and you talk to any Leaf fan about any Leaf fan over the age of 40 who they, you know, remember as the greatest Maple Leaf of all time. He's the first name that comes up, so a natural choice.
Yeah, he's second all-time in points by a Maple Leaf, Matt Sundin passing him. 10 points in a game, most in any single game in National Hockey League history, and just an all-around good dude, and we'll try and get him on the radio for you before we're off here at 2 o'clock, before we go to Toronto FC soccer this afternoon from BMO Field as TFC will play the Philadelphia Union. And speaking of Toronto FC, oh, it's been an interesting couple of weeks for that franchise as a whole. They completely tear up the coaching staff. Ryan Nelson is gone. It was seemingly a doomed experiment from the start, coming straight over from the Premier League as a player. He had no previous coaching experience. He's axed. Greg Vanney, the new interim manager with this Toronto FC team. And then the talk that Jermaine Defoe either wanted out or Toronto FC was interested in moving him out. They got a huge offer for him, apparently maybe $11 million from Queen's Park Rangers or Arsenal or whoever you believe, but that didn't end up happening as the transfer window is now closed for Europe, so Jermaine Defoe will remain with Toronto FC at least until the winter transfer window opens, which is around Christmas time. But guys, it's already a disaster for this team that was not expected to be battling for a playoff spot, which they are. No guarantee they even make the playoffs. They're supposed to be one of the best teams in Major League Soccer, and here they are now just clawing tooth and nail to get into the playoffs for the first time in franchise history, and another coach like ninth in 8 years.
It's so typical Toronto. You have a franchise that you finally think you've stabilized. They've been a disaster almost their entire history, and Wiki comes in, brings in these big names, and they reshape up the organization, and everything's going well. And once again, they're a tire fire again. And Defoe might leave. The coaching staff is gone. The future is just so unsettling there. And it's so sad because they really looked like they had stabilized finally. And they were almost a laughingstock at MLS the last couple of years. And now, well, who knows what they're going to be going forward with now that Lewicki is about to leave and he was their biggest supporter. So it seems like just a big mess. And it's sad because everything looked turned around for once. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
So many teams in this city. We saw it with the Jays, and we see
what
it
is
the
it
Leafs.
About this city,
yeah.
Jordan?
The teams are just good enough to get your hopes up, and just bad enough to crush them. It's Toronto FC. I will confess, I'm not a soccer fan. I'm not much of a soccer guy. I tuned in for the first couple of games of this year. It was a bloody big deal. Everybody was talking about it. Jermaine Defoe looked ridiculous. He was slicing through MLS defenders like he was a premiership player, and they were MLS players. And it really was. It was hopeful. It seemed like there was a team. So often in this city, like with the Jays and the Leafs, you got a team that's just scrapping, that just tries to get into the playoffs, that we just get there and something could happen. And this looked like a team that had their eyes on the big prize from the start. And it just started slowly and then fell apart really fast. And if you ask me to bet now, again, I don't know soccer, but if you ask me to bet from the overall vibe of the team, I'd bet they don't make the playoffs again.
Yeah, which would be It would be almost unfathomable, considering the amount of expectations, amount of excitement that surrounded this team at the beginning of the season, picking up Michael Bradley and Jermaine Defoe to go along with Gilberto. We're at Maple Leafs Fan Fest here at the Air Canada Centre, Maple Leaf Square, for the unveiling of Legends Row, as Daryl Sittler joining Ted Kennedy on that bench, and we'll give you the details on the third guy in just a second. But as far as Toronto FC and sports in this city in general, guys, I've had this conversation before, and it almost defies logic about what goes on with teams in this city, whether it's the Maple Leafs blowing a three-goal lead with 12 minutes to go in a Game 7 against the Boston Bruins, whether it's the Blue Jays having a six-game lead in the division in June and being five games now back of a second wild card spot, or whether it's Toronto FC picking up maybe the best player in the history of Major League Soccer. I don't think that's a stretch. I know David Beckham played, but he was well past his prime. Jermaine Defoe, you know, could play in the Premier League right now. What is it? Is it fair to say that Toronto is cursed? Like, can we say that? I mean, the Raptors look good. What if they fall on their face this year? Which could happen.
Yeah, is one playoff round really a turnaround for the Raptors? It just seems like we can have nice things here. And it's funny to laugh at, but it's just the way the sports has gone the last 20 years. And every time they keep dangling a carrot in front of us, like the 4-1 lead in the Leafs game and the Blue Jays big trades last year and their start this year and TFC, everything just keeps falling on its face and they keep crumbling. And I don't know what it is. The safest answer is that maybe we are cursed. I don't know what we did to deserve that, but we're just not getting anything and there's nothing to believe in, which has just been terrible for sports fans of a younger generation, because there's really nothing to be excited about other than rare glimpses of hope.
What we did is we got our hopes up, and it's because the city has been so starved for so long for a winner that what happens is a team shows a little bit of promise and everybody jumps on the bandwagon. And it's just because you're not used to success, so you get a taste of success and you want more of it. And the problem is that these are mediocre teams that we're cheering for, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, there's 30 teams in each league, and there's nothing shameful about being a team that's fighting for the playoffs. The problem is that the way this city goes is as soon as it looks like a team is up there, we expect them to stay up there, and that doesn't happen over the course of a long season.
All right, so now we have officially learned the third member of Legends Row, Johnny Bauer, up there speaking to the assembled masses, getting a nice standing ovation. This is, all right, that makes sense. Come on, Johnny Bauer, Daryl Sittler, Ted Kennedy.
Class of the Leafs.
Sure. And I think a very good choice by MLSE as far as the first three inductees to Legends Row. We'll try and speak to Mr. Sittler and Mr. Bauer here before we sign off at 2 o'clock. Also going on this week, U.S. Open. And, guys, I don't know if you were glued to your television screens Thursday night, but there was just a cavalcade of sports. It was almost too much to handle because you had the Jays, you had football, you had the U.S. Open, you had baseball pennant races and playoff races. You had absolutely everything, and you needed, like, six different pictures, but I think for most people, they got engrossed with this match, U.S. Open match, quarterfinal match between Roger Federer and Gael Monfils, a Frenchman, who's a mercurial guy who's kind of been a head case at times as well, and certainly in that fifth set was a head case. But he went up 2-0 on Roger Federer as they now blow confetti all over the place and bagpipes crank up again for the official unveiling of Legends Row. But it has been such an unbelievable set of circumstances that lead Roger Federer to this point in a semifinal matchup with Marin Cilic this afternoon. It seems like it's hard to say because he could get blown out today, but it seems like if you're going to have one last miracle, magical run, it would be coming back from 2-0, having two match points against you, and coming back to win in a fifth set against a Gael Monfils like he had in the quarterfinals.
Well, Roger's probably he's your favorite athlete's favorite athlete. He's so wonderful to watch. He's so professional. He's such an artist on the tennis court. And it looked earlier this year like he might have that moment at Wimbledon, and it didn't happen. And I think everybody who likes tennis is rooting for him, and that fifth set against Monfils was stirring. It was stirring in a way that you don't see very often.
Do you like your athletes more flashy, like Johnny Football, or even a Gael Monfils, who's, you know, over the top and exciting? And Roger Federer can be exciting. There's nothing more exciting than Roger Federer is playing at an elite level. But do you prefer guys that are a little more flashy? Because Roger Federer is not going to get in trouble, right? He's a family man, as far as we know. Although we thought that about Tiger Woods, right? So, as far as we know, he's kind of like, you know, plain Jane. Do you prefer your athletes like that, or do you prefer guys a little more, I don't know, a little more colorful and maybe more apt to get in trouble with the law or make headlines in other ways that Roger Federer really, frankly, hasn't done?
Yeah, I'm more of a conservative guy, so that's kind of what I look for in my athletes. I don't want having to hear headlines of who they're partying with in Vegas or guys who are just getting in trouble all the time. What I grow to appreciate about Federer is that exactly what you said. He's a family man, and he's just world-class to watch in the sport. And there are even people who are starting to doubt him a bit last year. And he's just so unbelievable to watch. And watching guys like him, and when we used to watch Tiger, it makes the sport so much better. And just having a guy like that who's so clean and out of trouble, and he's just amazing to watch. And there's no reason for anyone just not to adore him. And
yeah, you know, I don't care too much for who's a role model or who's not when I'm watching sports.
Yeah.
I want to see a great sport played by the best. And, you know, whether it's totally classy Roger Federer, you know, doing it politely, or whether it's Richard Sherman ripping Michael Crabtree after the NFC Championship game, those are both athletes at the top of their game, and
yeah.
I will watch any athlete on the top of their game, no matter what sport, no matter how much they want to talk trash.
Well, you don't host a radio show every week, so I like the Richard Sherman types a little bit better.
You need a little flash sometimes. You want to fill the minutes.
Right. I got to talk about something, and frankly, I mean, there's, other than just Roger Federer being spectacular, there's not a whole lot surrounding him that you can talk about. Novak Djokovic, kind of in the similar vein, but now he's settled down. You don't hear too much about him outside of the sports world. But I don't know. It just feels like there aren't those big personalities that you used to have in tennis. Like Andre Agassi, that was a big personality, and a guy who, if you've read his book or have any understanding of what went on in his life outside of tennis, that was a guy with a lot of personality, and those guys don't really exist in tennis anymore.
Yeah, certainly there's no heir to Agassi's throne, but Novak used to be pretty funny back in the day before he got all serious and became the number one player in the world and started kicking butt up and down the courts. But he used to do impressions of his fellow players,
right,
and he used to joke around. And, you know, he seems to have, when he got tired of losing to Federer all the time, he really cracked down and got serious, and now you don't really see that side of him much more. I love seeing that side of athletes, not necessarily the flashy yapping side, but the side that shows that they really enjoy what they're doing and that they understand it's a game and they're having fun, and there's not enough of that, if you ask me.
How great would like a tennis player like Richard Sherman be? How much
That'd
fun
amazing,
would that be?
Right? Come
it's
on.
A guy who talks and is that good on the court. And
he's hitting tennis balls in people's heads and stuff. That'd be cool. I'd like that a whole lot. We are live here. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're live at Maple Leaf Square for Toronto Maple Leafs Fan Fest as the unveiling of Legends Row is now complete and the bagpiping is done. How do you guys feel about bagpipes? I actually enjoy a bagpipe every once in a while, but 10 minutes about my limit for bagpiping.
It's fantastic for a statue unveiling.
That's
gives
true.
It a little gravitas, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I hear Glenn Healy is a great bagpiper.
Yeah, he is, apparently. He's played it at the Air Canada Centre. I think he's on opening day, he's done that, which they always do.
Is that
I think
him?
He's,
is that him in one of those kilts over there? Probably.
I'm not sure. our colleague now, Glenn Healy. But yeah, we will endeavor to bring you Daryl Sittler and or Johnny Bauer here on these very airwaves before we sign off at 2 o'clock. Guys, we didn't really get to, in our baseball conversation, the rest of the playoff races around Major League Baseball. And it is interesting, Ben Ennis alongside Jordan Heath-Rawlings and Jeff Simmons, that two of the biggest movers and shakers at the non-waiver trade deadline, the Detroit Tigers and the Oakland A's, picking up David Price and John Lester respectively, have been two of the more sad sack teams since that moment. And certainly the Tigers in a little more difficulty now because they trail Kansas City by two games in the American League Central. And now Seattle Mariners by a half game for that second wild card. So they're actually on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. Oakland's pretty secure in their spot in that first wild card. But are we surprised I think we should be, that neither team has really taken off since that point.
I think it's a good picture of this baseball stretch run. If you look at the standings, I think it's the 1st of June, maybe the 3rd of June, every single division lead in baseball has changed hands, which is something you don't often see. And certainly when you looked at the standings then, you wouldn't have thought that, because the A's were running away with it. The J's were still up. It looked like we were going to have, you know, a few locked in playoff teams. And now pretty much, with the exception of the Orioles way out in front, pretty much every division is still up for grabs, which is, you know, it's going to make for a fun month.
Just don't tell Batista or Jansen about that stat. They might scare them a bit. But sometimes, a lot of the time in sports, making moves that make you look better on paper doesn't help. We saw with the Blue Jays last year, stability has become the way of the world in baseball. And the teams that didn't do that much, like the Angels and the Royals, and they made minor tweaks, but those are the teams that's really taken off. And sometimes adding a big piece, kind of like the A's did, they got rid of Cespedes, so that's kind of shaken up their whole roster, and they had a pretty sizable lead. And since then, Oakland, Detroit, they've fallen out of first place, and maybe being stable is the way to go. And if the Blue Jays kind of built off that, maybe they could have had that kind of success.
It also speaks to the added expectations when you're the A's or the Tigers and you're already in a playoff spot and you're looking good, and you bring in an ace like Lester or like David Price, and all of a sudden we're not talking about holding on to win the division anymore. We're talking about World Series. And it's almost like you skip that process that, you know, you're still in a fight here. And, you know, if you take that for granted, baseball is such a marathon that if you start taking for granted that, oh, we're going to be here at the end of the season, you start losing a few games in a row, the team behind you gets some hope, and suddenly it starts to crumble, and then you're searching for that identity again when before you might have been certain of it.
What is your favorite time to be a sports fan? Because for me, I mean, this is probably the second favorite time for me, where you got playoff races in baseball heating up, NFL just cranking up, National Hockey League about to crank up as well, and then training camps for the NBA as well. But number one for me has to be that April. You know, you got the Masters, baseball, and playoff races in basketball and hockey. What? How do you guys feel about it? Because to me, this is good, but not as good as it gets.
Yeah, I'm with you. April's definitely week one of the NFL is one of my favorite days of the year, but April has everything. You got the Masters, you got the start of the baseball season, which brings so much hope. You have the first round of the hockey playoffs, which is way better than all the other rounds. There's four games a night, and I love that. And then even for football fans, before this year, the NFL draft has been on, which is a great event too. So it's pretty much got everything every night. And
do you watch every second of that NFL draft, all 45 hours of it?
No, but the first two rounds at least are prime TV watching, especially the first round. It's become a great event on the Thursday night. I don't know what the seventh round is, a bunch of nonsense, but the first round is, that's one of the best sports shows of the year.
I guess.
I don't know. I'll take this time of year. I'll take about
go ahead,
3 weeks.
Be the dissenting opinion.
Yeah, I'll take about 3 weeks from now when it's the last week of the baseball season and we're about to do our fantasy hockey draft and we're in week three of the NFL and we're starting to sort the wheat from the chaff. And this is what I'm looking forward to. I can't, as much as the NFL draft is entertaining, it's got nothing on real football. And my favorite time of the sports year can't include a time when no NFL games are being played.
Yeah, and certainly NFL games are being played right now. And Sunday, going to have a first full slate of games this season. And I love it. You know what? I love the early NFL season because there's no bye weeks, and you get jammed full of NFL every single Sunday.
And you don't know which games are going to be good. Any team can win.
Right. What's your favorite game of this weekend? Like, I was looking at it. It seems, you know what? It's hard to evaluate because we don't know who's good. Really, we don't. We think we do. We don't. We don't know who's good. Who's lousy? I mean, I think Jacksonville's probably lousy, but they actually finished last season pretty strong. You got Bengals, Ravens. That could be good. Who knows?
Peyton Manning versus Andrew Luck. That's the game of the week.
Yeah, that's probably the game of the week. I mean, Niners, Cowboys on paper look sexy, although I think we all expect the Cowboys to be pretty lousy. Yeah, it's just an exciting time to be a sports fan, and getting more exciting as the weeks pass, because start of the National Hockey League season is right around the corner, as well as the Toronto Maple Leafs and Montreal Canadiens will get it all cranked up on Sportsnet to open up the Rogers NHL package as well. Okay, before we go, guys, then, on that note, this is probably one of the last times you guys will get a chance to voice your Stanley Cup predictions as we go forward. I don't know if you'll be on the program before the start of the NHL season. So before we go, Stanley Cup predictions, who's going to meet there, who's going to win it? Jeff, let's start with you.
I'm a complete sucker for the St. Louis Blues. I keep hoping for them, and they finally added some offensive pieces that they might push them over the top. So I'm going to go St. Louis winning the Stanley Cup. I'll take over Pittsburgh. I like what they've done this offseason.
I'll take Pittsburgh going to the Stanley Cup final as well. I like the idea of them maybe getting their swagger back with a new coach. I'm going to be the most unoriginal person on this panel. The Stanley Cup will be won by whoever wins the series between the Los Angeles Kings and Chicago Blackhawks. Sorry, they're the two best teams by a wide margin.
It's hard to argue with that. Good stuff. We'll have to see how it pans out. When we come back, going to talk some Blue Jays with Mike Wilner. And plus, lots going on here down at Maple Leafs Fan Fest. We will try and grab Maple Leaf. We will try and grab Daryl Sittler or Johnny Bauer. Lots coming up in the next 2 hours before we get you set for Toronto FC Soccer. I'm Ben Ennis. This has been Sportsnet Magazine Live with Jordan Heath-Rawlings and Jeff Simmons on the Sportsnet Radio Network.